All right, I've got 3:30. This is the Rancho Murrieta Community Service District, September 16th, 2020, regular board meeting. This meeting is being held via Zoom due to the lockdown. With that being said, those that have joined us on Zoom, welcome. I'm going to move forward with the agenda. Item number one, call to order. Would you do roll call, please, Amelia?
President Mabee?
Here.
Director Danko?
Here.
Director Butler?
Here.
Director Merchant?
Here.
Director Pohl?
Here.
Welcome to the meeting.
Thank you, Amelia. Item number two, consider adoption of agenda. I'll make a motion that we adopt the agenda as is. Do I have a second?
Isn't Dick Shanahan supposed to be on?
Yeah, where is he?
He's on. I just saw him. Hi, Mr. Shanahan.
And then you got to stop recording, Amelia.
Let's go ahead and get a second for the agenda adoption.
Okay, this is that interactive part of the board. I made a motion. I would need a board member to second the motion for consider adoption of the agenda.
I second the motion.
There you go. And we'll have a roll call vote. President Mabee?
Aye.
Director Danko?
Aye.
Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Merchant?
Aye.
Director Pohl?
Aye.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Amelia. Item number three, closed session. So this will take just a moment. So board members, bear with us while we transfer the function from Amelia to Tom to go into closed session, specifically for legal counsel, anticipated litigation, and public employee performance evaluation, general manager.
I'm pausing the recording
session and I'll report out and then we'll do a quick 5 minute recess.
Thank you. I'll let all our attendees in and I will let them know we'll have a 5 minute recess. We'll start at 5:08.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amelia, I have 8 after the hour so we can start if you're recording.
I am recording. Thank you.
Okay. We're on agenda. First of all, thank you, everybody. As Amelia said, everyone has 3 minutes to make a comment on non-agendized items. If there's a group of folks, it can go up to 5 minutes. So coming out of closed session, we're at item number 4 on the agenda. There's no reportable action that was taken or will be taken coming out of closed session. So we're going to move directly to consent calendar, which is item number 5. I would make a motion to accept the consent calendar as presented by staff.
Second.
All right, who seconded that, please?
Randy.
Thank you. I would like to have a roll call vote. President Mabee?
Aye.
Director Danko?
Aye.
Director Butler? Director Merchant?
Yes.
Director Pohl?
Yes.
Amelia?
Butler, can you hear us?
No, I can.
Oh, hello. Hi. And your vote, ma'am?
I'm here.
Yes.
Yes.
Your vote on consent calendar.
Yes, aye.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. Staying under item number 5, it is 5B, approval of the bills listings. For everyone just taking a look at it, it's a new format. My only comment is I do like it. I think it is going to assist us addressing these issues much quicker than we've been able to do in the past. So staff, thank you as we continue to improve the organization. With that said, moving on to item number six.
Yeah, that's me today with the staff report, general manager's report. As you can see, we continue to have to report on what we've got going on related to COVID-19. We have not had any additional employees testing positive. And as far as I can recall, we haven't had any employees taking time off for COVID-related issues. Moving on to Laguna Joaquin, it's a very big topic this time every year. And over the past 4 weeks, we've been doing everything we can within our power to solve the Mitch-Fry or kind of mitigate the Mitch-Fry problem. So I am told by the residents who signed the petition, a couple of the residents who signed the petition, that the Mitch-Fry problem has been decreased quite a bit. I believe going to treatments every other week has dug into the cycle of the Mitch-Flys and thereby hopefully making it a little bit more palatable. With the help of SAC Yolo County Vector Control, Mosquito and Vector Control, we have installed two bug attraction devices that they fly in there and they die, which allows us to keep track of what kind of bugs and kind of the frequency they're going into or they're hatching. One of the things that they told us we should try to do is figure out when they're having the bigger hatches and try to have our treatments happen just prior to when we expect the next hatch to take place. We had a great amount of concern that the oxygen level in Laguna Joaquin was going to go low enough that would cause another fish kill. And so we allowed water to come down the CIA ditch from Clementia, and we filled up Laguna Joaquin, and we think that also is providing some help. We are monitoring the level of Laguna Joaquin and the oxygen levels every day now. I'm getting an email every day of what they are. So kind of puts myself in a better position to understand the day-to-day activities there. And then we're releasing a request for proposal tomorrow that we're gonna try and get an environmental or engineering specialist to come take a look at Laguna Joaquin and start looking at our options. Everybody says if we dredged Laguna Joaquin, it would be the best thing we could do to fix it. That's probably millions of dollars and years of trying to make it happen, but we'll find out. And hopefully through this RFP, we can get answers to some of the questions and maybe make some headway. Looks like I left the COVID case update there accidentally. We haven't had any new people sign up for the Rockio controllers, but I will tell you, have you had your Rockio set with the Flex Daily schedule as the as we're in this smoky time, you would have watered less, which is helpful. Over the past few weeks, I've met with the Murrieta Village to discuss the camera systems we're gonna put outside to monitor incoming and outgoing traffic. We were having an issue with getting electricity to the right place, but I met with them. I met with the RMA Compliance Committee to discuss security gate and security patrol issues. We've gone to some of the meetings with SAC Central Groundwater, the Slough House District, the Regional Water Authority. And at this point in time, Paul Stevenson, our Director of Field Operations, is going to be the point of contact for these agencies, so I can focus more on the activities here at the district and he can kind of monitor the outside water agency information. And as we get to a point where we get closer to 3,000 connections, he and I will both become more involved in those organizations to help us along the way. Murrieta Gardens infrastructure, we're working on closing out that project. We have some outstanding inspections and some outstanding bills we have to deal with, and we're working with that on a regular basis. Like I said, I have not heard from Bob Kyle in a while with the Residences East. The Riverview project and no activity as far as the district is concerned since August, but I do understand that in the next month or two, they expect to be getting the grading project going. And then the Legacy Villas and Suites project, I met with developer and Coastland at Coastland Engineering to kind of expedite how the project is moving forward. And it's my understanding that meeting was very useful and that project is moving along. And then an activity that really kept me busy the past few days is we discovered that the CFD 2014 Melrose bond, unbeknownst to us, had not been transferred into the county TEETER program, in which we would have received those payments directly from the county. And so through the work of staff and with the help of some very valuable or very useful staff for the county, we were able to what is termed as stripping the debt from the county tax roll, making it our own. And then we issued a demand letter to the developer last Friday to have them pay us around $850,000 in late payments and fees as of yesterday. I'm happy to say we did receive that check, and we verified that the money was in the accounts from which the checks were drawn. And so moving forward, we're going to modify a little bit how we manage the CFD 2014-1 bond or fund, and that will come in the form of a report to the Finance Committee in October, and probably a formal staff report outlining the history and the sequence of events, probably for the November board agenda. There's a couple of educational opportunities, Special District Leadership Academy in September. I'm not sure if that is going to take place or not. I'm currently not planning to attend that. And then there's a clerk conference, Board Secretary Kirk conference in October. And if it's online or not, I don't know if Amelia's on vacation at that time. She's going to be in Disneyland, so I don't think she's going to log in. And last but not least, we had a part-time employee, Graham. Give me a second, it's pretty tough. Graham started working with us in March or February, right around when COVID hit. And he was here extremely helpful with allowing workers to work from home by scanning in mail and doing lots of task force. But unfortunately, unfortunately, Graham passed away like a week after he left work. He said he had told us that his cancer had come back with a vengeance. And he worked for us on probably August 26th or around there, and on September 30 passed. And and that's it for my general manager report. Are there any questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
Linda, on the Legacy Villas and Suites project, that is the, has been referred to before as the
extended stay,
right. And exactly what are we interested in moving the project from and to? I know where it's going to be from.
Did I have a typo?
I was just wondering what that meant.
Moving the project forward.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry, I left the word forward out.
Okay.
Sorry.
I thought we were talking about
engine 39, public assistance. 1729.
And that's my report.
Operations A2.
Tom, I'd like to comment. You and I have talked about the passing of Graham, and I know that the father spoke to you and just had nothing but good things to say about the other employees at the district. And I just want everyone, on behalf of his family, the board, if there's something we can do, and you and I have talked about that, we in fact will do. But this was a young man that was having cancer. but still enjoyed coming to work for the district. And it was a huge part of his life, even though it was a short part of his life. It obviously meant a lot to him. And for his father to reach out and to speak to you, I think that echoes your leadership and where we're trying to take the organization. So on a personal note, I thank you for what you gave that young man an opportunity. And like I said, at his late stages, he still thought coming to work was a good gig that says a lot about the organization. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, moving on, we have administration and finance report.
We have a couple of hands raised.
I have two comments, if it's okay with you, President, maybe? For
yes, please. Comments.
Very good. I will take them in the order that their hands are raised on my screen. Mr. Public first.
Was that me, John Q. Public?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I have a couple of questions on the TDA bills. It says the county had elected not to include them. Did they indicate why they elected not to?
No.
No? Okay. The second thing about the stepping back on the bills paid listing. So those listings aren't going to be included in the packet anymore?
No, they are. It's just a different format for the memo.
Okay, I must miss it because all I see here is just one page of the big number one.
Okay, did we miss the four page of the worksheet?
Is it in the packet?
No, it's not there. We will post it, Richard. My mistake, I didn't catch that.
Okay. Yeah, I was saying that was a big change of not including it. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention, Richard. I appreciate that. Sorry. Okay.
Yep.
They will be posted after this meeting.
Okay. There was the end of my questions.
And I have another hand raised, Sully.
That's me. This is John. On the first page of the admin finance, where we talk about the water, for the residential water consumption.
Mm-hmm. I apologize. They're not there yet.
I know I raised my hand because Tom said he was done with the general manager report, and that was next on the list. So I didn't know where you were going next. So
it will be me.
So. Mr. Sullivan, how about if we do this? How about if we let staff give the board, administration finance report, and then you can jump right in with your question when she's completed.
Thank you.
Hi. So this is Cindy. I'm going to presenting the finance report. I think I know what John is going to ask. Is it about the, there were more than 113 homes receiving water services than August 2019?
No, I was just trying to average the annual use, and we've had this issue in the past. And when you look at the 12-month weighted average of use by the residential, it's around 424 gallons plus or minus, and we're reporting 648. And I know Paul made a mention in his report that we were using more water than our goal for 2020, and so we probably need to re-average the cubic feet or the 100 cubic feet across the year to determine what that number is. Because each year, I mean, the way you're reporting it now, you're putting 2 months from the new year and you're dropping 2 months off from the previous year. So it's really not the true water year, but it certainly is more in the 420 420 to 450 range that it's been, not 600. That's my comment.
Okay, but if you look at the trend in the past 3 years, it's always in the 600, not in the 400.
Okay, so if you take all of the months and you add them up and divide them by 12, it's going to be like 424, not 686.
Okay, I'll look into that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'm just going to mention the highlights of the finance report. I wanted, regarding the residential water consumption, the customer counts, and we called something, we called a mistake that caused by the system, how the system pick up the customer counts. So we added 76 homes from Marietta Gardens too, but the system picked up all accounts, so including the off accounts. So their true number should be 70, not 113. I already asked the programmers of the Platinum to correct that. So next month we'll have a true number, correct number. And for the commercial water consumption, and the commercial water usage in August 2020 was down 36% over July 2020. And it's year to day, commercial water usage was really close to projection. And now I want to move on to aging report. So the amounts past due more than 60 days in August 2020 totals $65,085. And among that, 20,000 of this total is owned by one future development site. And the residential accounts that have become delinquent, maintain this list broken down by last month's payment was made. We actually run a report every couple of days to see who paid. People actually pay every week, and if they can't pay the full amount, they will always pay something. So that's a good thing. And we're also calling these customers and trying to get into a pay agreement with them. Moving on to reserve accounts, compared with last month, there is an increase of $69,418 in reserve than July 2020. The next thing I want to mention is the reserve fund purchase authorized by general manager of this month is the security project 20-9-3. It's the security replacement, camera replacement, and let me see the name, specific name of that. Totaling at so that is the 21-09-3, the security license plate reader replacement and the security camera storage replacement project. The next thing I want to mention is on the investment report of the district. So the Wilmington Trust ending balance as of August 31st, 2020 is $526,969. Then I pulled the balance again on September 14th, because on September 1st, based on the CFD debt service schedule, the payment due is $262,367. That is $135,000 in principal and $127,000 in interest. And that goes hand in hand with the bond issue that Tom just mentioned in his report. The balance of Wilmington Trust on September 14th dropped by $262,367, which is the principal and the interest payment, which had to come out of the reserve and the special tax fund. So I just want to make the board aware of that. So that's concludes my report. I'm here to answer the questions if you have any questions.
Thank you, Cynthia. Are there any board members that have questions? Amelia, do you have any hands raised?
I don't see any hands. Are you there, Amelia?
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
I do not have any hands raised. Thank you.
Okay. We'll move on to 6C then. I believe the general manager is going to give this update.
That is correct. Thank you, Tim. This is Tom. Again, we've said it earlier and we said it last month as well. Chief Werblum is on an extended personal leave, and he is pretty much the one who knows how to pull the stats out of the system. So you're not going to see stats on this report, because if I were to show statistics, I wouldn't have any faith in them. But we're in the process of rebuilding a report for the future, because we need to be able to report out on a regular basis what's going on in security. We're doing a lot of work with the RMA on enforcement of things like what's going on at the beaches, various park hours, bonfires, littering. When necessary, like at Bermuda Court or some of the roads, we're doing a lot of work basically at the response of some of the members of the residents of the RMA. We're issuing more parking tickets and 24-hour tickets than we have in the past. I've directed the staff who write those tickets between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. every day, that if they see any car at any point in time during those hours, they're to issue them a citation. I'm getting a lot of positive feedback from the RMA, unsolicited feedback, that they're very happy with our staff. Connor Tyre and Mr. Propelka are doing a great job of following their training and meeting the requirements that we have for serving the district. And then we're going to open up the case of trying to get the defibrillators again. That was on Jeff's docket when he left. And so we're going to get started on that project again. We did have de-escalation training for all staff here at the district. A gentleman came in on August 24th and 27th and cycled through everybody. So we all got a good taste of how it is to de-escalate situations and, you know, keep yourself from getting involved in a situation that can be too stressful. And then we are sad to say, but all of a sudden, Brendan Areno, who was here for quite some time, he took a job as a correctional officer in Louisiana, where he's getting rained on right now. And then Mr. Hernandez went to a job where he previously was working in the Bay Area. So we currently have three vacancies in our patrol division. We have an open recruitment all the time for patrol and gate officers. People don't apply. So we've reached out to PDF, who we have a contract with for providing security services, and we currently have one of their employees working at the gate for quite some time. We're very happy with his performance, and we brought somebody in this week to begin training to work with patrol, and they will also learn the gate. So we're doing the best we can to stay staffed, but I want to make it clear that about just prior to when Jeff left, we took a stance that we're going to meet the requirements of Measure J by having one security guard on staff 24/7 and one security patrol officer on staff 24/7. And also that included Chief Werblum taking patrol shifts. So for like the last month and a half, we are not doubling up our patrol officers like we had in the past. And that's really having an impact on the budget. We're seeing returns, you know, we're seeing the fact that the budget is not spending nearly as much money as it was going to in the first place as budgeted. So that's good news, but it's bad news that we're so thinly staffed. So we are planning on bringing somebody in for a couple days a week to handle the administrative duties of the chief, and hopefully Jeff can return sooner than later and we can get back to business as usual. So are there any questions about security? And Richard, I see your hand up.
Yes, I was curious about the five sheriff's deputies that are here on the 7th. What's the story behind that?
Well, that was, I believe they got wind that we were having a lot of issues with golf cart theft, and also some complaints where they were getting called for complaints at the river and such as that. And so they, on their own inks, decided to send a group out and kind of saturate the district with a very visible presence on one particular evening, and that was very successful. Definitely a drop in that type of behavior immediately following when they came here. It's, you know, we're in their jurisdiction, so they can and do what they want. And in the case of what we do here for security, if we are visiting a party or something and trying to tell people, you know, need to follow the rules, and they choose not to, you know, not to heed our, you know, advice and continue to do what they're doing, we call the sheriff's department. So we're not there to enforce. We're there to enforce the rules of the RMA, but not the sheriff's department rules. Does that answer?
Okay. Okay. Thank you. By the way, your voice is dropping out every once in a while. It's kind of hard to hear sometimes.
Oh, okay. I'll get closer to the computer. Sorry about that.
Did okay, you that's okay.
Hear everything you needed to hear?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Amelia, do you have any other hands raised?
I do not have any other hands raised.
Okay. Not hearing any questions from the board members, we're going to move on to item 6D.
All right, welcome everyone to the board meeting. This is Paul Stevenson, Director of Operations. I'm going to run through our utilities update pretty quickly and raise your hand or chime in if you have any questions. So as discussed previously, water use is up. August was pretty hot. A lot of people are working from home. So we believe that's probably why the water use is up. You can see that in the graph. Our gallons per capita per day is about 322. So that's a bad rebound as where we want to be in relation to our 2020 goal. That's only a 6.7% decrease to our base year comparison, and that's the year of 2013. As it relates to production value per connection, for service connection, it's 858 gallons per connection. And then I also want to give kudos, if you scroll down a little further, Amelia, on August 24th, we had an issue at our water plant that our chief plant operator caught, called me out, and we worked from the wee hours of the morning into the midday to get the system back up and running. And so luckily we didn't have any issues as it relates to water supply from that, but it was all in relation to lightning strikes. And so we're working towards making sure that that doesn't happen again. We do have redundancies in our system and it shouldn't have happened, but we're working with the consultant to figure that out and make sure that it doesn't happen again. Water supply is on its typical track. It's on its downward trend until we can start pumping from the river again to fill our reservoirs, and that will be after November 1st. When there's water available in the river to do so. And we want to make sure that that water's clean and clear when we start diverting as well. On the wastewater side of things, it's continuing on track as well. Our secondary storage reservoirs, which collect the wastewater during the winter months for production into tertiary treated recycled water for golf course irrigation use, is being drawn down as we're turning it into golf course irrigation water. And that's a good thing because we don't want to run into issues of not having enough storage if heavy winter rains come. And so at this point, we've got plenty of storage and we're going to be continuing the drawdown as we supply the country club recycled water. Continuing down, had no issues in our sewer collection system. We had scheduled a lot of drainage work that we wanted to do this time of year. Typically, this should be the driest time of year. As everyone knows, it hasn't rained in quite a long time. However, a lot of the drainage systems were inundated with water. So once we wanted to get in with tractors to do some work, we couldn't. They were getting stuck in mud. So we had to go around and tag residences in the areas that were over irrigating those drainage systems, notifying them that we wanted to get in there and do some work. So please allow the drainage system to dry up and not overwater. And as the photo shown there shows, that we were able to get into one area as well as other areas and do some work. And we're gonna continue to do more work until November when the rains start coming. Well, hopefully the rains come sooner than November, but we're gonna continue to do as much work as we can before winter rains come. Utility staff work was pretty typical. Did have three water leaks in August, and one was a major repair at the intersection of Lago, Para, and Lindero, which we had to utilize an emergency contractor to come out and assist on. It was a large issue, and then it took a little longer than we expected because there were some unmarked lines, which is typical for our district. When I say unmarked lines, when utility staff starts digging up the street, before they do that, they have to make sure that underground service alerts are called in and the local utilities go out and mark where their utilities are so we don't dig through them. As staff was excavating, they ran into some lines that were not marked, and so they had to emergency call out some of the utilities to help figure out what was going on with those and then dig around them to get it done. And they did a great job wrapping that up. Moving on to project.
Paul,
your question?
Yes. On that drainage ditch that you have a picture of, why would they dig it up and not rock it?
You don't want to rock every single ditch in the district because, one, the weeds are going to grow through it anyways. And if you have to excavate it in the future, you're going to be digging through rock to get to it. So most of the ditches are left in their natural state. They're going to have like a minor swale to them, so like just a kind of U-shape to them. You want the drainage courses to allow water to actually percolate into the ground. You don't want to create like basically water slides throughout the community. You actually want to try to keep them in their natural state with vegetation in them and not have them all just rocked and cemented. And so that's the reasoning behind that.
Okay.
There, it looks like there's a hand up from Sully.
Paul, did we convey water over to Van Vleck Ranch out of the secondary storage?
Yes. So to help facilitate the drawdown of the secondary storage, we sent a little water, and we are going to continue to send a little more water over to the Van Vleck Ranch to help draw down the secondary storage. We try to get down to dead storage each year so that we can accommodate our 100-year rain event. And if there's more than 100-year rain event, then we have some wiggle room as well.
So do you have an estimate on how much water is going over to him this year?
As of right now, I do not.
Thank you.
Yep. So moving on to district projects, I've got some verbal updates to my updates here in the packet. So with the water rights renewal, that The packet was complete for that. Checks were drafted and submitted to the state. So that should be, haven't gotten a receipt as it relates to that yet, but we should soon, excuse me. And that's in the process. So that's a good thing. Recycled water, untreated water fee study. Again, that's on hold with the chlorine gas to bleach conversion at the wastewater plant. Staff is continuing on with that. We had to wait for some additional fittings to come in, and the electrical contractor doing work there is continuing to run conduit and wire for signal and controls. And you can see in the photograph provided, if you scroll down a little bit,
there's a transfer pump that's going to be between tanks and the systems there that's being installed as well.
Hey, Paul, there's something going on with your mic. Maybe get closer to the computer or something like that.
Hey, sorry about that. Communication issues, maybe a phrase on the internet or something.
Dam inundation mapping and emergency action plans. So those are being submitted. Had some back and forth with our consultant on that again as well, trying to get some responses back from county OES. Just got one today, actually, from OES saying that they received our Michigan Bar Dam Emergency Action Plan. So that process is still continuing as it relates to that work. At our 6B sewer lift station, the electrical panel there has been installed, as well as the new PLC and the programming for it. There's just some cleanup work that needs to be done on the front panel. And so that project's coming along in about 90% complete right now and going well, no hiccups with it, knock on wood. Scrolling down to development projects, I got a verbal update in relation to the Retreats East and North project that the tentative maps have been extended for that project. And on the Rancho North project, that there's still working on incorporating some traffic comments from the county. So hopefully we'll have an update as it relates to maybe that project moving forward next month. If you scroll down, there's really nothing else going on with the other projects at for lot 4 and 5. I actually have a verbal update for that. Everybody can see the work going on next to the country store there, just to the east of the country store. That's lots 4 and 5 in the Murrieta Gardens commercial area. They're going vertical with the buildings there, and a lot of work's being complete. And they reached out to the district for water and rural water permits. And so we have installed meters for both rural water and recycled water at those lots. So that's moving forward. And there's also some work being done as far as lot 11. So we've received additional deposit funding on that, and it sounds like that project's going to be getting back to us and about moving forward as well. On the FAA Business Park, they're continuing building there as well for the buildings, and we anticipate that they'll be requesting water and sewer services, I should say permits from the district soon. And on the Riverview project, skipped over Murrieta Hills East. We haven't had any update as it relates to that project. So nothing going on with that, nothing formally submitted to the district on that project. On the Riverview project, Coastland has provided their reviews back on that project. So that project is moving forward. And so I think there's been some back and forth comments between the engineers and Coastland. And so they've been expediting reviews on that project as well. And I don't know why it's not in this packet here, but on the there's also, as the mentioned in Tom's report, there's the Murrieta Gardens Villas and Suites, that project has submitted an application and deposit, and has been reviewed by Coastland as well. And so there's another project there within the Muriel Gardens moving forward. So a lot of things going on. Any questions?
Six two-story buildings.
One hand raised, Mr. Sullivan. I do have one hand raised, Mr. Sullivan. Would you care to speak?
Maybe he left it up from previously.
Okay, very good.
Anybody else, Amelia?
That's all.
Okay, Paul, thank you. A question I have for you, Paul, and it's way above us. We're just a water district, but our associations and our legislative groups, have there been any talk about, I get 2013 is our benchmark, but we're blaming everything that's happening in the entire universe on this lockdown process with COVID. So as you stated, we have more people working from home. That would tell me there'd be more water usage. So that would disproportionately place our numbers to where they should be. So if it hasn't been brought up in your arena, I think it needs to be formally brought up in our advocacy groups down at the legislature to put an asterisk or to get an exemption or something, because what we're doing today is not what we did in 2013, and what we're going to do in 2021, we don't know yet. I don't know if any of that made sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And let me answer a few questions that are within that. So yes, we have discussed it regionally within the Sacramento region with the Regional Water Authority that uses up with people staying home. That they are aware of that. And the Regional Water Authority does speak on behalf of all the local area water agencies sharing information. And all our use report information goes to the Regional Water Authority every month, and they create a graph and information with that, and it's also submitted. So they are aware of that, and some of that information does get back to the legislature. They are the organization as well that's trying to help facilitate regional water infrastructure programs that the legislature had reached out to them to ask about. They are aware of that. Legally, the district does not have to comply with the 2020 as of yet, because we are currently not an urban water agency. However, district did pass a policy years ago wanting to comply with the urban water policy, knowing that pretty soon we are going to be over 3,000 connections and are going to have to meet that. So being proactive, the prior board that adopted that policy made that a goal for the district to reach. So that will be noted, but us not reaching that is not a major issue for the district.
I understand. Thank you very much. Thank you for the reports. Moving on to item
Tim,
seven.
Could I ask one question first, just real quick?
Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Paul, I wasn't aware we were throwing water up to Stan's place at this point. Is there any relation to that? Or is the club taking what we would consider to be a historically, excuse me, similar amount of water to throw on the golf course? Are we filling up ahead of schedule as a result of not displacing a lot of water out there?
They're pretty much on track. They're using a little less water, but they're generally on track of what they would normally use. The thing is, with all these fires, even though we've had a lot of hot weather, oddly, the fires have kept the evaporation rates really far down. So that affects our storage levels quite a bit, because when you talk about large surface areas and you're getting evaporation of, 14 inches versus 7 inches or so, That's a huge amount of water. So I like to make sure that, as I mentioned previously, that we have adequate storage so that we don't run into a cease and desist order ever again.
Good idea. I can still remember standing in front of those guys.
Yeah, don't want to do that again.
Very good, thank you. Moving on, I'm sorry.
Yes, I have a hand raised, sir.
Go ahead.
Mr. Sullivan, are you ready to speak with us now?
I don't think it's ever been lowered.
No, I lowered it myself and he's raised it again.
Okay.
John, I'm afraid you're having trouble talking to us. I see that you are not muted. Oh, and your hand's up again.
Amelia, do you know sign language?
Yeah, let me see. He keeps raising his hand, so he has something to say.
Okay, why don't we do this? Until he comes on board, we're gonna move on and then we'll backtrack if we need to, as soon as we can make voice contact with them.
And speaking of backtracking, I have had someone chat with me. So it's about the security report. Shall we go back to that now?
Sure.
Crystal Matters, are you on the line with us still?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, very good. Would you just like to ask your question, ma'am?
Let me scroll back up to what it was. Hang on really quickly. It was, sorry, it's taking me a minute to find it. One, it was, I'll just go from memory. My question was with respect to the patrol. I think it was mentioned that that it's not, and I don't intend to put words in anybody's mouth, but that there's just one patrol officer on duty and that has been a cost savings. And my question, the first question, was whether having one patrol officer on duty as opposed to, I think in previous times, there was more than one or there was some overlap staffing. If just having one patrol officer poses security or safety concerns for the patrol officers on duty. And then my second question was, what efforts have been made to fill the vacancies other than retaining PDF security personnel?
Chris, this is Tom Hennig. I can answer that, Tim, if you'd like.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Well, we're doing our regular recruitment efforts, which is we have the jobs listed on our website and posted where we need to post them. And we're just not getting applicants that that meet the requirements. It's kind of strange, but that's what's been going on the past few months.
Understood. As to my first question regarding safety risk or potential safety risk to the patrol officers by not having either two officers on duty at the same time or an overlapping officer, and I apologize for my ignorance. I don't know exactly how that was staffed in the past, but I understand there is a smaller staff, to say the least, with respect to patrol. And perhaps you can correct me where I've misstated anything.
If we felt there was a safety risk, we wouldn't leave the officers singly staffed. And so we do not feel there's a safety risk at all by having one officer on at all times.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the questions.
Amelia, have you heard from Mr. Sullivan?
He is able to communicate via chat, and he said, has CSD reviewed the change to the crossing of the golf course south between the bathrooms at 8 Green and the 9th Tee? They have noted they are not going to build a 42-foot street and only a 10 AB road. Paul, are these things making sense to you? Can you see his chat?
I think what they may be looking at is building a temporary access road just across there for their first phase. After our
last board meeting and or committee meetings, Mr. Sullivan requested the development plans there. So I put him in direct contact with the Riverview engineers who supplied him the drawings he was looking for. As it relates to roadways, that's not within a district purview, and I can't really comment on what they are not doing, but I believe what the Riverview project is going to do at that turnout for just a temporary to install a waterline loop down to their first phase of the project is just to put in like a gravel type road where currently I think it's all dirt and maybe some grass. But that's it. So I that's not going to be a final road by any means from what I understand. That's all I am aware of.
And we have another, we have a comment from Mr. Sullivan. RMCC and Murrieta Club Properties objects to this change.
Okay, I understand that. So what I would ask, Tom, is staff follow up with RMA and the country club and kind of see where we're at. And I would probably say, Paul, you could give an update to improvements committee at their next committee meeting. And then if it's larger than that, the committee can figure out what they want to do or how involved and bring it to the board. If that's satisfactory to the rest of the board members?
Yes.
Okay, not hearing from other board members, then that'll be the process that we go. Amelia, any other hands chatting or anything?
There's no more hands, no more. Well, Mr. Sullivan has his hand up again, but please chat with us, John, if you have something to add.
Okay, I'm going to move forward and we can come back if we have to. And hang on. I just read the chat. Hang on.
Paul, can you see this chat?
I'm looking at chat. I don't see anything new.
Is there a reason that Murrieta Club Properties isn't in the loop with CSD?
Not that I'm aware of.
We're not the lead on this, obviously. So, like I said, let's kick it back to staff. And if it's more of an RMA issue coordinating everything, then so be it. Like I said, we can move it forward to improvements, and if they decide something needs to come to the board, then we can in fact do that. Okay, moving on to item number 7. Pretty straightforward. I just want to point out item D. It's called special finance, but the only reason I'm pointing it out is it's a date change from when it's normally there. That's the reason why it's a special finance meeting. Otherwise, it's the monthly finance meeting. Moving on to item 8, correspondence. I did not see any, so unless staff has something.
Tim, this is Tom. I've received a couple emails over the past few days regarding the Laguna Joaquin. I didn't think it was worth noting that it was actual correspondence. It's just kind of questions back and forth.
Okay.
So we address them when they come in and they seem to be getting the answers they're looking for.
Perfect. And thank you for doing that. Item number 9, this is comments from the public. We have 3 minutes for each individual. Should they have a comment on any of the agendized, or in this case now in public, non-agendized items. Amelia, do you have any chatting or hands?
I currently do not have any chatting or any hands.
Thank you. Moving on, excuse me, to item 10. This item shall be removed from the agenda. No action is required for item number 10, so it'll be removed from the agenda. So that takes us to now item number 11, considering adoption of ordinance 2020-03. Amending District Code Chapter 15, the Sewer Code, regarding updates, revisions to various provisions. With that said, this is the second reading. Paul, I guess I'll ask you, there's no changes from the original reading we had last month?
Correct. There's no change to it.
Perfect.
Second reading, as you said.
Perfect. So with that, I'm going to make a motion and then we can have a discussion if we need to, but I make a motion that we adopt ordinance 2020-03. Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Janko.
Amelia, would you do roll call, please?
Yes, we do not have any hands raised or any chats on this topic either. President Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Yes.
And Director Merchant. I'll skip to Director Pohl while Director Merchant gets his.
I'm unmuted.
Yes, sir. And your vote?
Aye.
And Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you, board members. Moving on to, it's a discussion item. Item number 12, discuss security department revenue funding service options. Tom, I believe this is going to be you.
Yes, that's me. And Amelia, if you would bring up the memo I wrote. I want to be kind of really clear about this. The security options is a very big discussion going on right now, because we're having issues with recruitment, we're having issues with funding, and I'm just trying to generate conversation to help us understand where the board wants us to focus our attention. So we can move forward with the project or move forward with whatever it is going to be. Amelia, are you there?
I am here. I'm looking for the document, sir. I will bring it up shortly.
Okay. I'll bring up my copy so I can walk through it while you're getting your stuff ready.
No, that's...
One second.
This is the one that John wrote.
While we're pulling stuff up, I want to confirm where to go.
Amelia, I'll send you my copy.
I have it here. You should all be able to see the document, Security Department Revenue Funding and Service Options.
So basically we find ourselves way over budget when it comes to our available revenue versus our required expenditures for security, to the point that it's caused a very material issue with how we are spending our property taxes. In general, over the past 5 years, property taxes have contributed more than $1 million towards the security budget. And if we had actually allocated administrative costs correctly, that number would be much, much higher. And now we're in a position where we have to address the fact that we don't have enough money coming in to support security as approved by the voters with Measure J. The chart you see right there is kind of an interesting one, and I'm just going to talk about it for a couple minutes. When Measure J was passed, the law itself or the measure listed rates for the various types of security undeveloped property behind the gates, commercial property, and various things like that. And the metered lot is the primary one because that's all the residents is behind the gates. And at the time Measure J was passed, the base rate for that year was a little over $19 a month. But because the security department was not requiring all the money that was available per the voters' approval, the district staff, all of whom are long gone, so you can't really, it's hard to find stuff as to their logic back then. But the best I can tell is it's what we call backing into a rate. And basically you establish how much the budget is, and then they would go to the various rate factors and say, okay, for the metered lot, we'll start off the very first year after Measure J was passed with a $15 and say 25 cent per month charge. And then they raised it to, it looks to be about $17 the next year, and where it stayed for about 3 years, they raised it a little bit more for three more years. And then they raised it a bit to just over $20 for 3 years. And then you run into 2007 and 2008. And we all know that was a massive restructuring of the United States economy, and California was especially hit hard. So we, at the district at the time, chose to raise the rates for security for the metered lot to the maximum allowable by law. So if you look at that orange line, it starts off in 98 with say $19.80. And the law allows us to increase the security rate by 2% per year. And so that line represents a 2% increase each year. And so in 2008, 2009, they obviously saw the horrible economy. And so they raised it to the maximum rate. And then you get into, you can see it in 10 and 11 and 11 and 12, they flattened it for a third year. And then it went up a little bit in 12, 13. And so you can kind of see it adjusting around. Right now we're charging the most we can charge per Measure J for all of the various rates. And we're still short over $450,000 to meet the demands of the security department. So what does that mean? It means that we've outlived our ability to pay for security as it was passed by the voters. So we need to very quickly come up with a solution. It's really important to note that property taxes, as they come into the district, are discretionary for the board's approval on how we spend them. And in the past, you really wanted to focus on using property taxes to fund reserves. We have a very looming expenditure in our wastewater treatment plant. And Paul continues to talk about it over the last few months, that as they go in and work on stuff, they're finding more and more stuff is wrong. And so eventually we're gonna have to do a major capital project there. Well, that's going to cost many millions of dollars. And so we need to be focused on building our reserves and not using property taxes to supplement security. And we also use property taxes to supplement drainage. So go on down a little bit, Amelia. And so basically, I kind of just went over what I said. And then over the next few months, we want to review the options. And because this is a public board, discussions have to be out loud. It can't be behind the scenes. You can't do it at the 19th hole or the pickleball courts and stuff like that. You have to do it in public. And so we're kind of throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks and seeing what the board has to say, hearing what the public has to say. Some people think if we use the Sacramento Sheriff's Department for patrol and enforcement services, that it may be in some cases that cost is a little bit less than what it costs to actually fully fund one of our patrol officers. One discussion of totally contracting out to privatize security for patrol services. And that's kind of where we're having to go right now because we can't fill vacancies with full-time positions, but we'll be able to start getting a sense of how viable that might be as an option until we are able to fill our positions. There's another discussion about separating the security cost for inside versus outside the gate and utilizing the property, utilizing the funds that are being paid by the residents of the village, of the Marietta Gardens too, and the commercial properties, and letting them kind of pay their own way for their patrol services, and then have the people behind the gate cover the gate officers and cover whatever patrol officers they would want. There's also discussion about maybe not having patrol officers on duty at times. But again, the Measure J requires us to fund security patrol officers 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so it's what we're trying to do is just generate conversation. I need to know where you guys want us to go. There's a document that that we can provide that kind of John Merchant provided this document. And are you prepared to, first of all, yeah, there it is. So I want to leave it, I just want to listen to what people have to say. And so I'm going to try to close my mouth and hear the comments, and we'll take notes.
Tim, I can
thank you.
I can go through this to start off with, if you'd like, or whatever your pleasure here.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. So, John, how about if you walk us through this to the board as well as the general public? We're not going to solve anything tonight. I think the general manager put it in very good context. The finance committee is working on some items from the cost side. So with that said, there are going to be some cause and effect. So this is just the start of the dialogue. We have numerous stakeholders that we're responsible to. And as we move forward, we're going to start meeting with those groups. So it's one of those, if you get frustrated because your 3 minutes are up, don't think it's your only chance. I will tell you, if you have thoughts, I would put them on paper and definitely email the general manager. So with that said, John, please.
Okay, thanks. Tom and I have had an infinite number of discussions, both from the financial side of this problem and in trying to identify what would be a roadmap for how we would proceed to ultimately get this done. And I started this by trying to identify a target as to when we would want to make any change that these discussions might dictate. And there's a very good chance that they will wind up in a referendum. And I identified June of 2021. It's a primary election. There will be a vote. And it would give us an opportunity to put in front of our ratepayers and our voting public an opportunity to say yay or nay to whatever we propose. Tom alluded to the fact that we're trying to find security folks to replace those that have recently left us. Part of what factors in from the standpoint of doing this sooner rather than later is the fact that it's a bit unethical to really start to entertain discussions with people on a full-time basis when there's a distinct possibility that we could shift the way we do security and the amount of jobs that we would hire for would be, whether that resulted from the private sector or from what we do internally, not the same and not the same amount. So to do some good faith hiring, I think we really need to get this going. Some of the things I identified as what we're trying to do here is first to really establish a new baseline budget like we did in 1998. From which we can step off into the future. And in conjunction with that, we should have a discussion on how we want to deal with the percentage of increase that we would be allowed to take every year. There are various alternatives, including tying it to the CPI or to new fixed percentages We have to see what we can do to be consistent with Prop 218, but it is, I think, a conversation we need to have. We need to be sure that we're building an adequate reserve for security. That would allow us to continue to make the technological changes that we've been making in our gate operations, in our camera operations. It also would allow us to fund replacement vehicles if we decide we want to do something more to be more visible in the back lake area. It's very difficult to do that with a Prius. And finally, I think, and part of this what Tom explained in his graph to have, if we put this in the form of a referendum, it's something we really want to do with language that going forward, and we're dealing now in our forensics here with this problem all the way back to 1998. We want to make it very clear what we're doing, and we want to be down the road avoid the misinterpretations that we've had as to what we can or can't charge and what we can or can't charge for. I think what I had in mind for getting this conversation started was first to have a series of discussions with the stakeholders, and there are a number of them. One is the Country Club, the undeveloped properties of Rancho North, the commercial entities, the airport, the equestrian center, and the village, and the new housing that was put up by the Hovanian folks, to get an idea of what the expectation of each portion of the community is. Inherent in that is a discussion that I think we need to have with the community and each of these entities in particular about how much enforcement we want to provide and how much standard security we want to provide. If we were to be asked to provide more support from the Sacramento Sheriffs, for example, would we want to do that on a random basis? Would we want to do it on a percentage of total patrol? We would want to be clear and have the residents understand the difference between those two types of coverage and also the costs that go with them. We did some analysis on exactly with when you include the fringe and retirement benefits of patrol, we get somewhere in the neighborhood of $70 an hour to provide it. And there is, and we have historically used sheriff support, off-duty sheriff support, where they provide the sheriff and his own car. And the disparity in the prices of using those two is not nearly what you might think. It's extremely expensive for us as a public agency to do what we do when you start costing in the fringe benefits that we provide. We need to have a discussion about totally privatized patrol and whether that means privatized on one side of the highway and not privatized on the other. I think both of those are worthy of a conversation. I've been prone to think about this, approaching this from the aspect that we really do two security functions in this community, and one of those is oriented more towards the security we provide outside the gate, and one is oriented towards the gates themselves and the security we provide on the inside. And when you start to look at the costs involved in those, as we collect security taxes, And don't hold me exactly to the number, but somewhere between $185,000 and $195,000 is collected on an annual basis from entities in the district that are across the highway. So if you took that money and you started to think about how you could apply that in a privatized situation, does it make sense for them to actually operate in a different system than we do? And again, as we go through all of this, I want to make sure everybody understands that me, and I think my colleagues on the board at this point, are not advocating for anything. We want to put these ideas out there, see if we can get some consensus. And then ultimately, because we have the latent power to run this show, I mean, we're the ones that are going to have to write this referendum. So gathering this input, and then taking that input out to a series of meetings that allow us to provide public outreach is kind of what I had in mind. And a couple of other things that fall into that conversation is, and Tom alluded in part of it to restructuring the system, and for lack of a better way to say it, I said a chief versus a non-chief. Do we need an administrative support inside the organization? And do we really need, if we have a chief, is that a chief that patrols? Or is that something we're doing with a structured security department that's run by someone maybe at a level of a supervisor or a sergeant? And what really makes sense from a cost standpoint and an organizational standpoint? And how do we get the administrative part of what we do in security accomplished? Part of when Tom showed you the graph, and the graph is extremely accurate. But one of the things we looked at was part of what really set this off and made this last year so dramatic of a change from other years in security. And understand that the 2 years prior to this year, we were actually dipping fairly significantly into our property tax allocation. But through that entire process, until we did the analysis, we brought in the consultant and did the analysis of our administrative overhead, we had been historically charging either 20 or 21.5% as an allocated amount as security's part of our administrative structure. What that consultant told us that we were under that by at least 10%. So when we added that money in to compensate for the fact we weren't charging enough for the support that admin provides, we got to a point where we were basically running a $2 million security department. And that's what really set off a lot of this conversation. That plus requests from different entities in the communities, questioning rates, questioning formulas, how we attain the rates, looking at historical information on how they were charged and when these rates went up and down, that went all the way back past 2008. So it really became apparent that we had to do this sooner rather than later. There was one more on the page above there. Another part of that engaging the RMA to really define, there's really, and I left one of the terms off here, there's really three things we're dealing with here. We're dealing with compliance, we're dealing with enforcement, and we're dealing with CCNRs. And I guess the questions we want to start asking, for example, when we have these stakeholder meetings, particularly with RMA, is, you know, our security guys are costing $70 an hour. And are these the people you really want to be doing garage door enforcement? And if we don't do it, could you do it? And perhaps could you do it more efficiently? And could you do it, more importantly, more cheaply? And again, it's a conversation. And the one that I put last, because I don't want to deal with it, is armed versus unarmed. I want to identify the costs. Is it a security department or is it a police force? And we know why it's not a police force. If you've been here as long as I have, we could not possibly afford that. So how do we staff that? And what does it mean if we have unarmed security versus armed? And again, I'm not advocating for anything, but it is part of the conversation. We need to identify all of these as they relate to costs, because once we come up collectively with what we perceive the community wants us to do, the next step for us is to cost that, okay? So that we can tell everyone in the community what their proportional share of that bill is going to be, and they can vote yay or nay for it on a referendum. That pretty much is the process that, you know, is in my head. And I've already talked a little bit about how we would go through the process. And the first thing was the stakeholders meetings with RMA and the equestrian and the airport and the commercial and the RMA and the Murrieta Village and the Murrieta Gardens, Country Club. After we get through with those, I think we could do some public outreach. I know RMA is I think, still doing their own outreach to the RMA members, and we will, I'm very much listen to what the folks have to say on that meeting. I think after we get through that part, we have to formalize an organizational structure, identify the costs, and I'm really into this reserve contributions, both for physical equipment and for going forward for staffing the gate with enhanced technology, so that as build out occurs, we become much more efficient at handling the number of cars that are going to come with that build out. We've got to go through a ballot preparation period. I think we're gonna enlist consultant help to do that. The guy that did the last one is still around, and Tom and I have listened to tapes as far back as 2011, where he was here, and the board at that time was pretty much going through exactly what I'm going through with you here now, and saying, well, where are we going to get the money to do all this? So this is not a new problem, but it is a problem. I think that the time has arrived. We really have to get it done. Finally, this would come to an election. I'm reasonably sure this would have to be a referendum for security if we approach the drainage issue, which is another conversation, but a similar one. We might be able to do that in a different way than we do the security, but that's something we can work out with Mr. Shanahan as we go along. And finally, we would have an election. And I think that yay and nay of that election is a vote for the changes we recommend based on what we have learned, or a request that we stay at the status quo. And I think everyone really needs, and Tom started with this, needs to understand that status quo really means that we are going to adhere to what we are allowed to do by the existing measure. And again, that property tax money is money that should be dedicated to our reserves and our big time capital improvements. So that's kind of where this went. The only other one real important thing from my standpoint, and again, it's open for discussion, is I really think that in this conversation, we're dealing with the security as it relates to patrol alone. I think our gates operate well. We're not without the occasional gate problem. But I really want everyone to understand as we go through this process, unless there is clamoring for us to do something different, that the gates will remain as they are. They will remain. Our staffing at the gates has not increased since 1990. Our ability to support them has, because we have added technology. And I hope we can continue to do that, so we can really focus on one side of this, which is really about 25 or 28% of the budget. The other side will remain intact. But if we can separate the two, if we can take security across the road, across the highway, as a separate entity that we look at in a different environment, that really isolates the costs around those gates to the part of the community that both owns them and uses them. And the one final thought I have is, I know it would be exceedingly difficult, but I would like to at least explore the opportunity we would have for consolidating those gates under one owner. I think that would go a long way in a budgeting. I'm sorry, that took longer than it should have, but Tim, it's all yours.
John, thank you. It's obvious that you've done a ton of work on this, so much appreciated. I agree. This is a item that has been forthcoming for a while. This board just happens to be willing to take it on. So with that, do I have any comments from other board members at this point?
Yeah, Tim, it's me, Linda Butler.
Yes, go ahead.
I just had a question about the property tax. What percent of the property tax that we get each year is devoted to security?
That's a good question. I did know it at one point in time, but I can get that answer to you unless, John, you know it off the top of your head.
I know the answer. I was just testing your brain capacity.
Yeah, dude, there is none. Come on.
It's 65% this year. This year it's 65%.
Okay. And the rest we use for reserves?
Some of the rest we use to fund drainage. Mm-hmm. And then the rest are basically operational funds. And we need to talk about reserves, and we will at the mid-year budget budget discussion.
And so that percentage sounds high. I don't know if that's true or not, but it does sound high.
It should be zero. It should be 0% of property taxes used to support the Measure J agreement to provide security services.
So then it's really high. John, I just wanted to say thank you for putting this together. It's so inclusive, and I think that it's going to give us a really good outline for and direction for figuring out what we want to do and can do.
One of the things, Linda, that, you know, when you look at that property tax allocation, and the number is extremely high. I mean, as a percentage, we all know that. That's why we're going through this process. But the other pressure comes on drainage, and we haven't even gotten into that conversation. I mean, this has been enough in the beginning to get this far. But when you start looking at the fact that our overwhelming capital requirements are for both water and sewer, I mean, you know, that's not where our money is going at the moment. That's why this is so critical to deal with and start being able, and you know, we've had these discussions, Randy particularly, and has, you know, this understands that we need to get our reserves in order. Well, there's $750,000 annually out there that could be the basis of a good solid reserve program to do these water and sewer projects if we can get off of this security and drainage mess that we've kind of walked into here over the last 22 years.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other board members?
Yeah, Tim.
Go ahead.
To the idea that the gates are sacred and are going to remain the same, just playing devil's advocate here, and the referendum goes down in flames, and you take away the 400 and some odd thousand from the security budget, and you take away the 200,000 that's being paid from across the street, is there enough money to run the gate system?
So I understand your question, and staff's already started the process of separating out gate function and patrol functions. So that is really one of those questions that we've got to delve into and take a look at. I don't think there's a clear-cut answer to your question, Randy. I think it's one of those, we know certain things work, certain things don't work, but as we move forward, there's still obviously more staff work to do to really be able to give information to the board on what are those costs, because what, as we had in the GM's report, we haven't done a full audit of updating our security tax for the commercial areas in a long time, if ever. So we need to know what those revenues are and just kind of start penciling those things in. But your question is the same as, is or similar to one of the questions I have that just has to get answered. If it's not answered, it needs to be addressed the best that we can.
I think, well, I think that's the first thing that I would look at, because before you start guaranteeing that the gate system isn't going to change, you better figure out if you've got enough money to do it, worst case. Second and last comment, someone had, before you start looking at this privatization and blending of patrol officers and whatnot, you better read your union agreement, and you better get a decent labor attorney to read that agreement and let you know what you can and can't do before you spend a lot of time and effort on something that may not be legally possible.
Copy, understand that. And again, those are those things that as a governmental agency, we're in this mess. It's not a mess, but we're in this process, getting out of the process. And that's why I said it might take a couple of fiscal cycles, but you're right on. Tom and I have had minor discussion, and that's one of the items as well. There's a whole list of just governmental issues we've got to take a look at. Any other board comments?
Yeah, this is Martin. I think this is a worthy venture, but it looks like the timeline is very short. If June of 2021 is the goal, it seems like we need to put tasks to a timeline and see if we got the resources or maybe divide up the tasks so that we can meet that goal.
Understand, and this is just that first part. I think that as the finance committee looks at some of this, you're absolutely right. We're going to be working backwards from a drop dead date. As Director Merchant said, when do we have to have it on the ballot, et cetera, et cetera, and work backwards from that standpoint. By that same token, Director Janko has said, you know, we need to do something to fall within the requirements of the measure. So having meetings after meetings is probably not realistic. So it's going to be somewhere in between, and that's a fine balance of getting community input versus our fiduciary responsibility. Anybody else on the board? Okay, not hearing any. Amelia, do you have any hands or chatting?
Tim, I have one more yes, comment, if I could.
Go ahead.
Just that one of the things, and I agree, it's a good point Randy made about checking out what the union implications would be. But we're basically here without stripping services, and those would probably down the road include the gates. We've used the better part of our property tax allocation to prop this thing up. And at some point we will use all of it. And I don't know where that would be, but some point down the road when we're probably not sitting here and someone else is, they're going to run out of money. I mean, it will happen. we've already really run out of money if you consider just basically what we're trying to provide with Measure J. So, you know, I agree. It's not simple. And that's why I thought, you know, a time was somewhat of the essence, because you're going to make a clear choice here. Interestingly, the last time we went through this exercise, it passed with nearly, I believe it was nearly 80% of the vote. So it's, you know, the gate is a perceived value for the people who live inside it, a sacred perceived value, I suspect. And I think patrol is similar to that. So proceeding down the road with, you know, I think halfway through this process, we could get a pretty good idea whether it would pass or not. And if we have to abandon it in the middle, then you got to do what you got to do.
Very good. Thank you, Tom. Amelia, do you have any hands or anything?
I do have a hand up from Crystal Matters. Crystal, are you available to ask your questions? You chatted.
I am. So I posted them on the chat just because there are a few of them. So I'm just going to read from there just because there are members that may not have this in front of them. So first, I'd appreciate receiving any information related to the costs associated with options to the extent we currently know them. What blended costs look like versus just security. I don't know if there was ever a time when PDF wasn't used, but if we could see what the cost of each is. Second, the level of services provided by each option, current as well as expectation by the community. And that latter part, expectation by the community, I think you'll cover with the public outreach. And then third, the experience of personnel. And again, please forgive my ignorance in this regard. So I just use the term union patrol versus contract security. And where I'm getting at there is, patrol officers, as I understand it, at least some of them have quite a bit of experience being police officers, in the state of California or elsewhere. And so what kind of experience would other options have? And if that is of value to the community, and that kind of ties into the next one, which is that I would request that the board consider conferring with local fire department and law enforcement as part of meeting with stakeholders. And then finally, are there publicly available documents that identify the current structure of security, priorities, and services so that we can, as members of the community, review information so that we can make informed decisions as to what you all are considering and the options that you're proposing.
I will address majority of those. The answer is yes to all of them. As we put this document together, it's going to be made public. I don't understand quite on item number four, the fire service and other law enforcement. This is a fiscal matter. So that's the reason we're discussing this today. But to a certain extent, we are a ancillary agency to the first responders. So what that role is and what our role has been in the past and what it'll be in the future, that's all going to be part of the matrix that identifies everything. So really, I think your last item on documents is really just going to tie into the overall process that we're about to undertake. Again, this is just the first discussion. We wanted the board to hear it, to kind of see what this looks like, and then we can start giving staff some direction from that standpoint. So thank you. Amelia, do you have any other hands?
Yes, Mr. John Q. Public has his hand up. Are you available?
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Based on what was said at the Finance Committee meeting, I was expecting a lot more financial information presented to the board. And based on what John had said, he's done all the financial research. He's got all the information. There's nothing more to do. You know, it's time to make decisions. I think some of that financial information is critical to understanding what's going on. You know, based just what John was saying in the Finance Committee meeting, there's some critical issues, and one of them, the fact that he said, talking about the cost of the gate, takes 75% or something like that of the security budget, and 25% was operations. And I was doing some quick calculations, and based on what people behind the gate are paying and the 75-25 split, and the fact that we're paying almost $500,000 of property tax to support security, it sounds to me like everybody in the district is paying about $15 every month to support security. And that includes us over in the village, and that a large portion of that is being used to pay for the gate. And I think that information needs to be put out there up front, you know, to know what's going on, because I don't think there's any way that you can justify us over in the village paying for the gate, especially when they're using it to keep us out. But, you know, that information is critical. You know, you talk about all this stuff today, but you need to make the decisions based on the facts. And I was looking forward to knowing what are the facts. I can play with the numbers and figure out what's going on. And I was very disappointed that that information isn't being presented. It sounds like it's being glossed over, so you can basically, you got a decision you want to make and you don't want us to know it. So that's the end of my comment.
I'm going to answer that.
Go ahead, John.
First of all, Richard, you know, the if you look at the disparity in the village contribution to security and what they pay inside the gates, you could rethink that calculation easily. That data is available. We'll give you all the data you want. This conversation was more pointed about how we proceed structurally where we will present the data. It's also, you know, in what Crystal was asking, the place where I hope we're going to answer all these questions. It was not designed here to be, you know, some deep financial analysis of what we're going to do. That's the process we're trying to identify. But if you want the data, we'll give you the data. It's public record data. Just request it. We'll give it to you.
I certainly do.
Well, and so I'll answer that as we move forward. At no point did direction go to staff to have the data presented in this presentation. The presentation is the very first discussion the board members have had specific to this item. With that being said, I've got questions to ask the board members so we can give staff some recommendation. Amelia, do you have any other hands raised?
I do not have any other hands raised, and I do not have any chats.
Thank you. Tom, this is directed at you. With what you've heard from the board, as far as the documents that staff's provided to this point, the input from the board, what's your sense, and do you need more specific direction to be given to staff?
That's a good question. I've yet to really have a direction defined. You know, John put up a lot of good bullets here, and it's important that, you know, if we're going to focus on a short amount of time to have a referendum ready to go in June, we do need a little bit more focus. One thing you could tell me is that we do not want to utilize property taxes to pay for security, And is that at all feasible? And then we can go to a minimum staffing example and produce that by probably by the finance committee meeting, hopefully. And I think what you're going to discover is that we're still going to need to utilize probably $300,000 in property taxes under the current year to meet that demand. If you want me, that, so we could do that, and that's pretty simple to do. The other thing we could do is we could see what it looks like if we go strictly with contract security, not even addressing what the complications would be with the union, so on and so forth, and we could see what that number looks like. If the bottom line is, you know, you don't want to use property taxes to fund security, I don't think it's possible. I think you have to go back to the voters to get more money or change the scope of how you're going to treat security. Now, to Richard's comment regarding behind the gate and the village and the Murrieta Gardens too, and the commercial paying for the gate security, they are not. The residences behind the gate pay a lot more for the gate security. And that's clearly that how that rolls. So if the direction is we don't want to use property taxes, find a way to do it, then we can come up with some solutions. That's kind of what I was looking for. And then there's the issues, and a big issue to me is I really want to know why we have to have our officers carrying guns in the future. I can't find anywhere where the decision was made. Yep, we're going to have our officers be armed. There's justification for it, and there's justification against it. And so it could be that disarming our guards puts them in a place where they become more affordable, because our patrol officers, they have to go through consistent training, and to meet those requirements, you know, that you have to pay them a little bit more. That being said, we're still not getting any people applying for the jobs. So we're kind of in a quandary here. And I'm looking for kind of comments like that. If the comment is just start throwing numbers at us, then we're gonna have to stop doing what we're doing and just build numbers for presentations at board meetings and committee meetings. I really need something concrete from the board to take the next step.
Understand. So I would like us to, and I guess when I say us, staff, and I want the board to really remember that our administrative staff has been cut in half when it comes to security. So again, a lot of the items that are going to have to be done are going to be done by other staff members. So other work shall take a back seat. With that said, Tom, I think I would like you to build timelines working backwards. What is our absolute drop dead date to have a referendum on the ballot? And so that'll be our timeline working backwards. And that would be for the June 2021. I would like to look at a couple of things specifically. One would be what it would look like without any property tax being used. The other would be look at a couple of items, and that's a combination of what would it be if we were fully staffed as a district with district employees, what would we look at as completely privatized, contracted out? I think the other items, such as being armed, there's some costs there that we need to identify, but that's a larger issue that we're not going to necessarily address tonight. But I think those couple of items will get us going. I think unless the board has something different, as of right now, I would say if you could get those items, and again, we've moved the finance committee up, but that would at least put us in the ballpark of what it would look like at first glance without us then looking at creative staffing, working with RMA on their compliance officer and some of those things. Because I want the community to understand we are obligated to what that tax measure says. And it's fiduciary responsibility that is in fact driving this. Now, whether our service has been good, bad, mediocre, perceived a benefit or otherwise, that's gonna be the emotional side of the input of the residents as we move forward. So does that give you enough to at least get going for the finance committee meeting next month?
Yes.
Okay.
Tim, can I ask,
yes, please.
Can I add one more thing that should be fairly simple to do and which I talked about earlier, and that's how much does the gate cost to run and how much tax revenue do we get from inside the gates? Can we pay for the gates with the tax revenue that comes from inside the gates? That should be fairly simple to come up with, right?
Yeah, Randy, the answer to that is, yeah, there's enough money to pay for the gates. You run out when you start paying for patrol. That being said,
I'd just like to hear those two numbers and what's left over, if you could.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Randy, to follow up with that, that's where I've asked staff to start looking at what are the costs of gate operations versus patrol, because then we'll know those numbers, and then what does that mean? What does that mean patrolling within the gates versus outside the gates? So we're all thinking along the same path there. Okay, so any other comments from the board?
I do. I liked your comment about having Tom do a timeline, because I think that's really important to get to that June 21st date. But I think you should ask him in addition to find out what resources he needs to accomplish that in. Because maybe he can't do it on his own.
No, and so Martin, that's a great comment. Tom and I have had some discussion. He mentioned in his board report there might be a opportunity for an interim person to come in and assist us. I think that's going to be very important. A, we need it as a district for the day-to-day operations, but as we move forward with something like this, you can see where this, again, just isn't going to be the GM that works on this. It is going to affect other staff in other areas, and things are not going to get done. And we just as a board need to understand that and support staff from that standpoint. But to that point, Tom, as you build your timeline, I think what we need to do is probably put the workload factor in and you know, is it going to be a quarter FTE or a half FTE to take a look at this? And then that'll give us some options on coming back to the board and what is it going to take to meet some of these deadlines.
Okay.
All right. Any other comments on the board for item number 12? Not hearing any. Amelia, no hands?
I have hands raised, yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Please.
So, Mr. Yeah. You have the floor.
Yes, this is the second time somebody's told me that, you know, we over in the village aren't paying for the gate. The first time I kind of accepted it because there's a lot more people behind the gate and they're paying a lot more. But based on the numbers that John Merchant gave us at the Finance Committee meeting, it doesn't work out that way. And I don't buy it, you know, and that's why I want to see the numbers. And Tom quickly answered that, you know, people behind the gate are paying for the gate. I don't think the numbers work out that way. And I think it's important for us to have the numbers. And, you know, I think we're paying for the gate, part of it.
I think we can give you all the numbers you need, quite frankly. And the other number I'll give you, Richard, that you want to kind of build into your little analysis is the overall out of the 750 or 780 we take in property taxes. You want to calculate the percentage of the village as it relates to the whole. That'll help you a lot going forward in understanding the overall impact of the gate on the village.
So what it sounds like what you're saying is people behind the gate pay property tax and they're entitled to use that money to pay for the gate. Is that correct?
No, that's not at all. That's not what I'm telling you. First is that it qualifies as unrestricted income, and we're propping up the entire department, which might not be there in a configuration that could support you at all if we weren't doing what we're doing. Okay? And then I'm telling you that your $4 versus the 27 or whatever the number is on the inside are disparate because of the fact that you're not supporting the gate. And we'll give you the numbers. I'll send you the numbers myself.
Okay, thank you.
I'm telling you now, and I'm quoting you, I'm telling you now for the third time that you're not supporting the gate.
Okay. And all I need is the numbers to back that up. That's what I want.
You got it.
Okay, thank you.
Marianne?
Yes, one other question. Crystal, are you available to speak?
Yes, I'm here. And I don't know if it's helpful for people for me to put it on the chat as well. I just requested, initially I said, hey, I think it would be beneficial if staff could evaluate the cost of each option and provide the information to the board and public so that we're making an informed decision. And then as I sat back and heard Tom talking, I thought, well, gosh, I'm asking a lot without providing, you know, a potential solution. And so I said that I don't know if CSD can create a subcommittee for this issue or if the board can. And if so, if members of the public could assist, I'd be more than happy to donate my time, as I know that staff has already pulled in many directions. I haven't looked into the legalities of that. I just didn't want to make a request without proposing a solution that doesn't already tax an entity that's probably pulled in many directions.
Crystal, thank you for that. There has been recommendations to have some type of, I'll say a council to advise the board. We're just at no point to be advised. We are at such an early stage here that it's staff that has to run the numbers. It's staff that has to identify internally what we can do, what we can't do. And it very well might come back that this timeline slips until November of 2021. So as we get that and we move forward with some better understanding, then I think that's going to be that part of who do we reach out to, and some of those, we have a ton of experts in the law enforcement community that live in Marietta. I don't know if we have a ton of experts that are in the security business, and truly we are not a law enforcement agency. So I don't know if the law enforcement expertise is where we need a majority of the input, or is it the security, because truly at the end of the day, that is in fact what we are. So those questions that you had and offered are going to get flushed out, hopefully very quickly in the next several weeks, so that we can kind of pick a couple of parallel paths, multiple paths that we can go down and get some input and give some output as we know numbers, as we know options that are in fact available to us. So thank you. Amelia, anybody else with their hands up?
We do not have anyone else with their hands up, and we don't have any more chats.
Super, thank you. Moving on to item 13, director comments, suggestions. I open it up to the other board members. Not hearing Sorry. Go ahead, Martin.
I guess I don't know where you're at. I don't see the agenda up here.
It's item 13. It's director comments. And I apologize, Martin. This is a portion of basically the open session is closed to the public at this point. And this is an opportunity for you as a director to either make comments or suggestions, either based off of today's meeting or what the community's reached out to you.
I'll pass. Thanks.
Okay.
Tim, I have something. This is Tom.
Yes, go ahead.
I just want to let you know I've been invited by the RMA leadership to participate as a guest at their Fire Safe Council meeting September 28th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. So I think, I don't know what they want me to do as a guest, but I'm happy to attend, and they may ask me some questions. I'll answer very carefully.
I will have a conversation with you offline on that. I think a lot of what we talked about, item 12, touches some of that, but obviously it's not just a fire issue. It's all disaster, all preparedness type of issue. So, but I'll talk to you offline on that. Any other board members? Not hearing any. I've got a couple. I want to thank staff for their absolute due diligence in preventing another fish fry opportunity for us out of the front retention basin. I think once the information came to us, appropriate action was taken. Notification was totally appropriate. So to that end, I want to thank staff at all levels and multiple portions within the district itself. The other is I want to reach out to Tom and publicly thank him for getting the relationship with RMA back to where it needs to go, not only at the compliance level, but just the open lines of communication that you had started with the interim general manager, and now moving forward with the general manager. It's going to be critical, especially on what we've talked about tonight. So I publicly want to thank you. And as always, staff at all levels do a great job. When you see them driving around the pickup trucks, they're smiling, waving, actually being courteous. So that says a lot and goes a long way. So for that, I thank you. With that being said, if no other board members have anything, I would like a motion. I'll make it on item number 14 for adjournment. I make a motion that the meeting be adjourned. Do I have a second?
I'll second. Thank you, Ms. Butler. Roll call vote. President Mabee.
Nay.
Nay. Let's see if we can... let's see if we can overrule him, friends. Director Janko?
It's my privilege to overrule Tim any chance I get. I'm voting aye.
Aye. And Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Merchant, do you vote that we adjourn the meeting?
Sure.
Okay. Director Pohl?
Yes.
Thank you very much, and have a wonderful night, everybody.
Thank you. Have a good evening.